Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Some new economic numbers, the PPI, we'll get into that this morning, and looking pretty good. So it looks like the numbers on the overall PPI, 9.9% in July compared to a predicted 0.2%. The core PPI rises 0.9%, exceeding the forecast, better than expected. And so those strong PPI numbers leading to a decrease, if you will, in the market's implied probability of a September interest rate cut. Though the change was relatively small. So will the Fed use this as a reason to say, these are some hot numbers, if you will? And does that mean that the Fed rate cuts won't happen in September? I still suspect they will. So I know we'll be talking. We always talk to Dr. Michael Busler, local, and other economic experts. But this is all good news. I mean, the indicator here is that the economy is doing well. To me, I would say the only problem, if you look at the federal, you know, our debt, the debt continues to rise. And that's a real problem. And part of that, as we know, TikTok, just daily, we're paying all this interest, our country, meaning the national debt. And the reason for that is high rates like this. So I know we're all hoping for this. I got a notice yesterday in the mail. Tell me if this has happened to you. My Macy's card, which is one that I still keep, they have to legally send you the notice. Now, I don't keep a balance on this particular one, but it's over 33% on my Macy's store card. 33%.
Wait. So if you put $100 on that card, you're paying $33?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's insane.
That is insane.
That's basically, you know, when you think, obviously when we talk about the rate cut, the Fed rate, that's the charge that banks charge each other, and then it just goes up from there, right? But when you think about what it means for us, it's crazy. It's crazy time. So, and we're just paying too much for our own money, by the way. All right, so let's get into it. I want you to hear from Condi Rice, and we'll get into Trump. We'll get in. Yesterday when we left off, by the way, wasn't that fun? Dan and I always think, should we bring you the breaking news? You can let us know, actually. We should do polls, but you can let us know. Should we do that? Because I think we're the breaking news hour, if you will. And yesterday with Trump, you know, do you like that, Dan?
Sure.
Yeah. Dan Borowski. Because I think my instinct as a news person, it's my news background, so I'm always like, da 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 da, I try to rapid fire and bring you the latest. But is that a mistake? Because I could do, some days I do a commentary, I do a big take, if you will, to tell you about what I think about something. But on days where there's breaking news and somebody's actually speaking with Trump, he was making this announcement, which is a first. No other president, to my knowledge, in our nation's history has done something like that. I had fun with it, but did you? Was it good for you?
I had a great time.
Just a good answer.
No, but seriously, I'm genuinely curious too. I want the audience's input because we sit here and this is
we debate.
This is but this is stuff that we want to hear ourselves because we formulate our opinions on. So a lot of times we're listening very closely. And my favorite thing, Dawn, and I don't know if the listeners agree, is when we play a press conference or something live, and then we hear the Mystery Science Theater 3000 Dawn Stenslin commentary on it. It's some of my favorite things that you do. So. Please, audience, give us your input on whether you like when we have those live press conferences or if you just like us busting around. Vamping is the word that you use a lot of times.
Yeah, let us know. 855-839-1210. If you're on the YouTube chat, the YouTube, you can let us know. All right.
Why are you blurry?
Am I blurry?
Yeah.
Oh, look it, I'm blurry.
You're blurry today.
Is it all day?
No, it just happened when I switched on the camera.
Sometimes if I'm moving around a lot, like you can't move too much.
Is that what it is?
Because it's like, brr, it doesn't know what to do.
Huh. Well,
sometimes that happens.
Luckily, we have our genius engineer in the next studio over.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
Is it Jimmy Kelly? Is it
Philomquist? Well, Jimmy they're both geniuses, but this is Austin I was talking
thank
about.
Thank you, Austin.
But no, you are now fixed. You are.
Thanks for fixing
beautifully
me.
In focus again there, Dawn.
Thank you, darling. All right, we've got Colonel William Dunn coming up, so he'll give us his take. But when we think about tomorrow, and this is President Trump heading to Alaska, we now know that, to Anchorage, which is Alaska's largest city. And just a little fun tip, if you will, from history. Russia once owned Alaska and sold it to, and you can guess which era this was, but sold it to us, to the United States of America, for a little over $7 million way back in the day. So
that's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
What was like,
what can you
right
get for
after the Civil War?
Now?
Yeah. But, and then they made fun of, you know, fun of that. But so Russia once owned Alaska, but we were smart to buy it. All right. So Trump meeting literally halfway. If you look at the map, it's air miles as a crow files, as a crow flies, as they say. So Putin, Trump meeting halfway. Will this produce peace? So some people, if you watch them, the pouty pouty faces on the so-called unbiased media, which are very biased, they're all saying Trump has nobody in his cabinet who knows anything, not for nothing, but they know nothing about nothing with Russia and international relations, etc. So I believe that Condoleezza Rice is widely expected or widely respected. Was, as you well know, she was high up in the Bush administration, if you remember her, and has been quiet out of the headlines. So this is what Condoleezza Rice told Bret Baier last night, and this was to Fox News. I don't know if she's speaking out on other networks, but this was a good get. What is her take? What does she think about this?
Putin, in a sense, needs him more than he needs Putin. Yes, he needs Putin to stop this war, but he holds the options which he's articulated of putting more pressure on a Russian economy that is really in pretty dire straits when the Russians themselves, through their very fine central banker, start to talk about the dark problems that the Russian economy has. I think maybe people are trying to say, even Russians are trying to say to Vladimir Putin, we can't fight this war forever. Secondly, I think that you have the possibilities with the Russians to say to them, we are not going to do this over the heads of the Ukrainians because they have fought too hard. And that means that there's nothing wrong with having a discussion with Putin, but nothing can be a proposal that looks like an American-Russian proposal on how this war stops. The Europeans are going to be critical to whatever ceasefire eventually obtains. The Europeans are going to really be critical to making it work. Now, I'd be the first to say I think this war does need to stop, and it may have to stop with some inconclusive elements on how the territory will eventually look. I think Ukraine can be rebuilt. I think their defense industries are quite remarkable. They can continue to hold at risk things that the Russians care about, as they showed and what they did against the strategic bombing force. So let's not think of the Ukrainians as having no cards. They do have cards. And let's not think of the Russians as having all the cards. They don't have all the cards. And if you go in with that mentality, I think this will come out just fine.
Knowing Putin, why do you think he agrees to this sit down from a place of concern or for a place of trying to get his way in that room one-on-one?
Oh, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I do think he's concerned. And I think he just has a hard time accepting that he can't crush Ukraine, a country that he doesn't actually believe is a country. He told us it was a made-up country. But now, with the threats against the Russian economy, with the shot across the bow about secondary sanctions, maybe it's starting to occur to him that he needs to stop this war. But he's certainly trying to deflect any action that the president might take. And so maybe he hopes that going into the room, he can once again use words to convince the president that he still wants peace. But I would just hope that the president remembers what he said very eloquently, that he got off the phone with Putin and they bombed Ukraine that night. That's the true Vladimir Putin.
And so Condoleezza Rice, obviously former Secretary of State during the Bush administration, you remember her well, and had joined Bret Baier. I believe this was on the podcast. I don't know if it aired on Fox News or not, because I was last night was kind of crazy in my household. So I miss, you know, I just saw this from his podcast. But in any event, I think a few key points that she makes. Number one, She's acknowledging the former Secretary of State, very thoughtful woman. I was always a fan of hers. I know that in the past, in the first Trump administration, she had made some comments and perhaps was not the biggest fan of President Trump at that time, as far as his personality or his tweeting out on social media, whatever. But you hear her in a very respectful way talking about this. She's very hopeful. But I think a couple of key points. Number one, she said, you know, that Trump, you know, hopefully will look at the actions, not the words. And she's referencing Trump talking about this. That's number one. Number two, where she says Putin, who even back then during the Bush administration, when she was Secretary of State, had told them that Ukraine's a made up country. And he absolutely has always wanted to take it back to, you know, the motherland, Russia. And what I infer from her is she's saying, if not for Trump, in other words, there was no way Putin was going to give back Ukraine, but for Trump. And she's acknowledging that and hoping that Trump sticks to clearly what he believes on this. So for me, I'm very hopeful when I hear her speaking, but I loved seeing her on there, and I thought you would be interested in that. You can give me your take on Condoleezza Rice. I had always thought maybe someday she would run for president. I think she was so highly respected. She went into academia, obviously, but at that time, you know, I think that she was beloved by Americans. And Dan Borowski, I'd ask Dan, do you remember who she is? You know, I love that honesty, because my sons, I always ask Michael and David, you know, teenager, one in just graduating high school, one in college. Do you guys know who this is, or did you study her? Michael knew, because he's a history buff anyway. David, who? And then with Dan, you said what? You obviously remember the name, but you don't have like a memory of her.
I know the name, Condoleezza Rice, such a significant name for some reason. I know her face. Mm-hmm. I know her celebrity. Can tell you anything about her policies.
Yeah. So that's in a way that, you know, that's interesting to me. I love to get the take on that. But I think for a lot of people,
she was featured in South Park a couple of times, and that's probably the most.
Oh my gosh.
Her. Yeah.
South Park, which, by the way, I just saw ratings on them. Did you see that?
Ratings. I didn't see the episode. I didn't see the ratings either.
I didn't see the second episode, but they're smashing the ratings.
Really?
And that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is you talk about, wasn't she featured by South Park? There are a lot of Americans who don't know a lot of policy. They only get their news or reference on people, famous or important people, from South Park, which is crazy.
Yep.
It's a cartoon, basically.
Admittedly, it is.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So we got that going on. All right, let's move on. We'll give you. I just wanted your.
I mean, to be fair, it was also my first impression of a lot of Democratic politicians at a.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially Bill Clinton. They've done a lot on him.
Particularly Hillary Clinton, too.
Oh, my gosh. So let's go. Since we're talking about Russia and President Trump in this historic summit, heading to Alaska, meeting Putin. And by the way, it's clear that the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, will not be there. However, conversations ongoing. Let's get to, this is Caroline Leavitt. Mm-hmm. You want to go through this, Dan, as far as just her speaking. Let's focus on Russia.
Sure.
Here.
Yeah, yeah. First up here's one person that's been rearing his mustache back in the public eye is John Bolton, making comments about Trump's approach to what's been going on in Ukraine and Russia. So here, Leavitt both responds to him, but also offers a general perspective of the situation. This is on Fox and Friends this morning. Take a listen.
You're being very kind, and I won't be so kind, and I'll just name some of those people, such as John Bolton, who I think has made a disgrace of himself on television and in the newspapers, claiming that he knows better than President Trump. No, he doesn't. And neither do any of these so-called foreign policy experts who have never solved a foreign policy conflict in their lives. Look at what this president has done in 6 months. He has stopped seven global conflicts all around the world, using the leverage of the United States of America to negotiate these conflicts to an end. You had the leaders of Azerbaijan and Armenia at the White House last week, both of whom said this would not have been possible without the leadership of President Trump and his administration. So the American people trust this president. That's why they overwhelmingly reelected him. And I think it's pathetic, some of the chatter that we see from these so-called experts who have zero accomplishments on their own resumes to point to. President Trump knows what he's doing. He has great instincts. This is a highly complex and brutal war that, again, inherited by Joe Biden. Russia did not invade Ukraine under President Trump. They invaded under Joe Biden because of his incompetence and his weakness. And this president is trying to solve it and bring it to an end. And he deserves great credit for that.
Yes, he does deserve great credit. I thought Condoleezza Rice, that's why, you know, I'm not going to play the John Bolton stuff, just because I think somebody like Condoleezza Rice, who I think is greatly respected and more respectable, and I think what she said was wise, it was prudent, and I think she has a great perspective, right? And so I'm very hopeful with what she said, and she's listening to what Trump is doing, and I think she's encouraged by the actions of Trump. So that's why I wanted you to hear her and not Bolton. But as far as Bolton, you know, I know that Trump reacted to that. He has reacted to what he calls the very, you know, he calls unfair media. I think that's being diplomatic to say the word unfair media, because the media bias at a moment like this, and this is historic and it is critical, and you are talking about lives in the balance, and you're talking about world peace, you know? And so think about the media and their selfish motives. It's almost as if they want crime in D.C. and around our cities, our great American cities. It's almost as if they want death, destruction, and the opposite of peace in places like Russia, Ukraine, or the Middle East. It's almost as if they would be willing to put people's lives in harm's way because they suffer with Trump derangement syndrome, or they just want power. It's really a sin if you think about it, but that's our media today and others. So Trump really went off, and as far as referring to people like Bolton, he called, what do you call them? Fired losers. Dumb.
Sorry.
You know, and I think he's being kind when he says that, because what kind of person are you? Especially somebody who knows what it's like to get a briefing, and you know how important and how high stakes this is, and you're the guy out there who essentially comes off as hoping for war, hoping for death. And these are young men dying, but now, as Trump said just what, yesterday or this week at some point, President Trump talked about the fact that now they're running out of young men. And who have given their lives on the Russian side and Ukraine, and now they're saying, okay, men in your 60s, we need you, line up to fight and die. That's think about how horrifying that is. And this impacts these countries for generations to come. That's horrible. No one should want that. So you get the sense of a John Bolton with his dummy looking mustache and his face. I know.
How does that not tickle his top lip?
I don't want to think about him being tickled in any or anything involving his lip and tickling. I don't want to think about it. That's gross.
You're right. That's gross.
Ew.
40-second clip from Levitt talking about why it's important to find diplomacy.
One of the best things about President Trump's negotiating style is that he's very wise about not broadcasting moves he may or may not make in the future. And certainly the president has plenty of tools at his disposal that he could use if necessary. But he has always said that diplomacy and negotiation is his primary way of hoping to end this war. And so that's what he'll be looking to do tomorrow. But certainly there are sanctions and many other measures that the president could utilize if he has to. Not that he wants to. He's willing to. But again, diplomacy and negotiation has always been the way for this president. And that's part of his acceptance of the Russian president's request to have this meeting in person tomorrow.
So this is President Trump. He is looking forward to this meeting. It will be at a military base at the Elmendorf Richardson military, a joint base, I should say, in Anchorage, Alaska. And it marks the first time the Russian leader sets foot on U.S. soil in about a decade. And so this will also be Putin's first in-person meeting with a United States president since he began the brutal invasion of Ukraine back in 2022. And so Trump saying, you know, I'll know very quickly once we meet, but I think in person, face to face, I think this is the right thing. I hope and pray it goes well. I think we all should be hoping and praying for peace, prosperity. How could you not? We have your calls, 855-839-1210. Want to get to those. Bill in Montgomery County. Hey, Bill, you're disagreeing with some of what Condoleezza Rice had to say?
Yeah, I am indeed. I have a lot of respect for her. However, that we have the Iraq War, we have the situation in Afghanistan, and she owns that.
Not like
Bush Jr. owns it, but, you know, it's just, as far as a policy failure goes, as far as Ukraine-Russia, I may have been on before and have said this, but the war in Ukraine is going to end when one of two things happens. Either the Ukrainian military collapses, the front line collapses militarily, or Russia collapses economically. And I don't think, we have our intelligence community and all that. I don't know what they think about Ukraine's chances at this point. Mm-hmm. Russia's definitely on the move. They've gone on the offense. They've made some gains along the front. And I think as far as the Russian economy, that's still, up for grabs. I don't think anybody really knows what's going on in Russia, especially since China and India now we're threatening tariffs against India. That's been bailing out Russia. Yeah. But China's been bailing out Russia economically all along.
You're right.
And that's not going to stop.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Good points. And I think she owns that. I would just say that what she was talking about, first of all, thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it. I think it was important that she gave the perspective as to how long, when you think about Russia and how they viewed Ukraine, how Putin views Ukraine as, hey, that's our land. They stole our land. They're a made up country, and that he was eyeing it all along. And I think Trump knew that as well. That's why he knew that it was a real problem with the disastrous withdrawal in Afghanistan. When you think about that, and that Putin was saying, they're weak. This Biden administration, it's weak. This is my chance to pounce. And so I think that perspective is important, that if not for Donald J. Trump being sworn in January 20th of this year, I think that she's right. There is zero way that Putin would be willing to even have a face-to-face meeting like he is tomorrow, unless it was with Donald J. Trump. In other words, if Kamala Harris, I shudder at the thought, were the president right now, it would be over. It would be a done deal, Russia taking over Ukraine, and I don't think that was then reversible. So I think that's where she's going with that. So we got that going on. As far as Russia, their GDP growth is slowing. I'm looking at their Q2 numbers that were just released. And so this is their economy is faltering according to the latest numbers as we look at this. And Trump has keyed in other words, he is somebody more than any other president that I recall where he looks at, he can use the economy and economic means, understanding how money matters as power and using money, using economic power. Even when it comes to just what Bill brought up, in other words, even when it involves slapping a 25% plus tariff on top of everything else on an important ally like India to say, no, 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 you will not do business with, you will not buy energy from Russia. And then even with the EU and the UK trying to say, buy the energy from us, shut down Russia economically. And I think that's why we're seeing even further even further slowing of Russia's GDP growth because of what Trump is doing in the world. And so putting the brakes on that, understanding that if he's really strangling their economy, that shuts them down. But Bill's right with China. Yeah, they have provided support. The funniest support story to me, though, was when China sent, remember they sent the tanks with the Chinese tank drivers, and then we were flooding them with free porn, and then they were distracted. Remember that story? That was the best story ever, because you have these young Chinese soldiers. They're not allowed to see the porn. So porn is a power. That was a hoot. I'm just saying. 855-839-1210. I got to go. I'm up against a break, and we'll talk about Piazza. Yeah, we got to talk about Piazza Auto Group. I'm reporting live from the Piazza Auto Group studios here at Odyssey World Headquarters. Hit me up on X at Dawn Stensland. Great interview with the Colonel coming up. But whether you're hitting the beach or cruising through the city this summer, why not do it in style? The Honda Summer Performance Event. It's going on right now at my favorite Honda dealers, Piazza Honda. Right now, the time to get behind the wheel of a new Honda Civic. What about an Accord? What about the CR-V? Unbeatable leases, low finance rates. Hurry in. These summer savings will not last. Drive to Piazza Honda of Philadelphia, Langhorne, Pottstown, Reading, or Springfield. Do it today. Go to PiazzaHonda.com, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, PiazzaHonda.com. Tell them Dawn sent you.
The president radically changed the battlefield. How now military assets can be used to stop the flow of fentanyl. 265,000 fatalities during Biden's term. The question will be, how? Will the Navy intercept ships? Will special operations soldiers target drug lords? Or will we see drone strikes on Mexican drug labs?
Mexico probably doesn't want that, but we have to do what's right. They're killing our people.
So following his executive order, the Pentagon and DHS began discussing options, not just going after money or increasing border enforcement, but going into Latin America, where the cartels live almost untouched.
It allows us to now target what they're operating and to use other elements of American power, intelligence agencies, the Department of Defense, whatever, to target these groups if we have an opportunity to do it. We have to start treating them as armed terrorist organizations, not simply drug dealing organizations.
That was obviously Marco Rubio speaking, Secretary of State. And this week, as Mexico transferring these 26 high-ranking cartel members to the United States custody in a sweeping operation coordinated reportedly with the Trump administration, according to different various news sources. And this part of a broader effort by U.S. authorities in this administration to really intensify the pressure, put the pressure on criminal networks fueling the cross-border drug trade. To talk about this and to get some expert insight, somebody who is certainly a great guest and a great American patriot and spent many decades in our United States Marine Corps, Colonel William Dunn, William Bernard Dunn. Colonel, an honor to have you here with me here on the Dawn Stensland Show. Your take on this week, as far as Trump's crackdown on the cartels, naming them a terrorist, agency, and what you think about these latest reported developments. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Good morning. And thank you very much for having me today. I really appreciate coming on. And it's a beautiful day. I think it's a great thing. You know, what we have to do is figure out what the end state is. And we have not seen exactly what that is. Is President Trump going to say, reduce the flow of drugs in the United States by 50%, 80%, 90%, whatever the outcome is going to be. But right now it's reduce the flow. And he will leave it up to our planners, if you will, to figure out the best way to do that. If they officially declare the cartels 100% as hostiles, there's a little bit different by saying they're terrorist organizations and you can do actions. But if you declare them hostile, that's a whole different ballgame. And I personally have not seen that yet. I believe they're calling them terrorist organizations, which you can agree that they are bringing terror into the streets of America. Mm-hmm. And then what we'll have to do is have our planners and our military experts figure out the best way to do that. Is it a military action? Is it a diplomatic action? And then what is happening behind the scenes with the Mexican government and the U.S. government that Mexican government may not be able to come right out and say? For instance, You know, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to see a scenario where you have U.S. military fighting with Mexican military, because Mexican military is preventing us from going in to do direct action if that is what the president decides to do. So I believe there's a coordination going on behind the scenes. I don't know that factually, but it just makes perfect sense. We work in and with other countries sometimes, and those countries must overtly say, hey, we're not working with America, but internally, covertly, if you will, they are. And I think we'll see some of that coordination going on.
And so with this coordination, and it does appear that way with Tuesday's transfer of those prisoners, the cartel prisoners that I had mentioned at the top, as well as it was reported that President Trump secretly signed an order directing our United States military to target these drug cartels and the FTOs. And then that really, does that open the door to use American military force against those, you know, those foreign targets like that? I mean, could we, with cooperation with Mexico, you know, at night using drones or whatever, blow up some of these warehouses, evacuate the warehouses where they're producing the drugs, blow those up? Is that something that you could see happening?
I could see that happening with coordination with the Mexican government. I do not believe, and once again, for the listeners, I don't have any additional information outside, you know, normal channels. I do not believe we would do it unilaterally. That said, we have special operators that I call, when I was in the Marine Corps, we called them the others. And when the others show up at your doorstep, it's the, you know, they're probably, if you even see them, they're the last people you'll ever see if the others show up. And the cartels are very highly weaponized, highly armed, and highly funded. But I doubt they're a match for the others. And when the others show up, if that is what the president decides, then I think you'll see actions. But I bet you we won't read about it and we won't hear about it. And that's how the others operate. And you talk about some brave individuals that go in the most dangerous places. You don't want to see him show up on your doorstep.
Yeah. It just shows you that it's, to me, when I look at how President Trump, how this administration views this issue of drugs. I mean, President Trump is somebody, you know, he doesn't drink. He doesn't even smoke. I mean, he views this clearly as a national security issue in our nation, that these cartels, and you know, I'm not even mentioning the human trafficking and the child trafficking that he has home in, you know, looking for these 300,000, you know, missing kids, which is horrifying. But just from the drug side of it, that this is deadly for, it's one of the leading, you know, causes of death for young people right now, this drug situation. And so for me, just the attitude that clearly President Trump, this administration has to wipe out a foreign threat, a national security threat, I think that's a good thing for Americans. But I think also, well, it's a good thing for Mexico, a highly corrupt country. If I'm Mexico, right, if I'm Sheinbaum running the country, I'm thinking, yeah, let's restore Mexico to a country that's not so corrupt. And then what does that mean for Mexico moving forward? Does this liberate them of these powerful, like you're saying, wealthy cartels that have, you know, infected their country for so long?
Well, I think it's a great opportunity for the Mexican government to internally say, America's doing this all on their own. We're not helping them. And then they end up with the results, even though maybe behind closed doors, they're saying, you know, if you were to take care of this over there, we would say nothing. And so that's I could see that happening. I could see that happening very successfully for the Mexican government. And the most important receiver of this, if you will, action is the American people. We have got to reduce our children and our young men and women being killed by drugs that come across the border, by any drugs, of course. But there is an obvious, in my opinion, obvious intent for other actors, whether it's through China or other actors, to send deadly drugs across our border to kill Americans. It's the only logical solution to me is, you know, why is all this fentanyl coming over, sometimes being disguised as other pills given out to American children and, you know, young men and women who shouldn't be doing drugs, but when they go buy something and they think they're getting something else and they end up dead, it's an obvious threat. And, you know, the numbers, I heard it mentioned on the monologue here that it's 275,000 died during the Biden administration. And those are the ones we know about.
Yeah.
Imagine, you know, how many other individuals took something, died, and we haven't, you know, maybe it's 10, maybe it's 20,000. We don't know. But it's very logical to me that there's people that have OD'd on these drugs that we don't even get to the bottom line of. And it's just another casualty in the drug war, and we don't know how they died, but it could be a purposeful death by a state actor outside of our country.
And the connection with the Chinese, I know they're working on that one as well during the negotiations. And obviously, I'll just say it because the so-called mainstream media doesn't really say it, this is the root cause, as the previous administration, the previous vice president would talk about root causes, but this is the root cause of these tariffs, to crack down on things like fentanyl, the fentanyl crisis coming from China through Mexico, etc. We're listening to, if you're just joining us here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, this is our Marine Corps Colonel William Dunn, Bernard Dunn, speaking out about this. I want to switch a little bit, if I can, Colonel, and talk about tomorrow and Russia and what you see as so critically important with this historic meeting between President Trump and Putin.
Well, I think it's an outstanding step towards getting a resolution in the conflict. I'm very confident, and I'd be shocked if we get a resolution tomorrow. I think this is step one in a multi-step, multi-phased approach. You have two actors, Ukraine and Russia, who have diametrically opposed ambitions. One is trying to rid their country of an aggressor. The other is trying to take a country. Neither one of them will probably get what they want. And I believe if the U.S. completely stepped out of this and President Trump was not trying to help, this war would go on, you know, indefinitely. And it would fall into an attrition warfare and just massive human suffering. And as you see, no other country in the world is stepping up to the plate like President Trump is.
Mm-hmm.
And so his engagement with Putin is going to be an outstanding step, I believe. I don't know what will happen with the Zelensky piece. He should, in my mind, be thinking of an off-ramp. And what I would say, you know, if he was listening, I would say, hey, you know what? What you do today to survive the merge with Russia, you know, this is a new merge here. We're in a new step. And what I mean by that is when I go back to my aviation background, when two aircraft are fighting each other, as they fly directly at each other, if they that's the engagement, they both, one or both, have to survive the merge. If you survive the merge, that means you didn't get shot down on the first pass. Then you vector yourself into an advantage position, and then you attack and hopefully kill your aggressor. That's the way, if I was Zelensky, I'd be looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
Survive the merge right now. This is 3 years into a war. That's sort of a stalemate. You're doing well. Survive, rearm, refit, and then figure out if you're going to go back, you know, 5-10 years down the road and try to retake your land, if you have to give up any land. Russia, on the other hand, you know, they have to be becoming fatigued in this battle internally. So if they can get an off-ramp where Putin doesn't lose face. And to me, that's the biggest challenge. Putin cannot lose face because I don't believe he will. So he has got to be seen as some sort of victor. Even if it's a 1% victory, he's got to be seen as the victor, or else I don't think he'll stop. So I believe President Trump knows this, and I believe he is going to focus on, you know, a conditional ceasefire. And I don't want to say surrender, because I don't think Zelensky will surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to a ceasefire, and I don't think he should surrender, but you get to a ceasefire, stop hostilities, buy some time for both actors, and then maybe down the road the ambitions of Russia just, you know, become dissipated, and then maybe down the road the Ukrainian country figures out whether they can live with the current state of affairs. And if not, they have to figure a way, whether it's going to be diplomatically or militarily, to take back their land. And I think that's the best solution for the time period.
Colonel Dunn, in your book, Gunfighters Rule, you know, it starts out with we learn the story of a boy who obviously becomes a U.S. Marine. When I think of, and you obviously, you know, fighting honorably, serving our country, and we thank you for your service, sir. But when I think of, and I know you and your wife, Mimi, have daughters. My husband and I have boys. When you think about the journey of, you know, what's been going on with young men, with boys, the defund the police, and if you will, the low recruitment that now is on the rise. When you look at, with the perspective, sir, of your career, when you think about young men especially, and how they're viewed in this country, and with recruitment now, you know, coming back, the numbers coming back, I just wanted your perspective on that. As an author, as somebody who served as a United States Marine, obviously rising to the rank and earning the rank of colonel, your perspective on what we've gone through and what you hope America learns from what we've just endured since, you know, I'll say the summer of 2020 and you know, the past 5 years.
Well, I really appreciate that question, because military men and women join the military for a purpose for the country, and that purpose is to kill the enemy, defeat the enemy. And that is it. Our job is to fight, defend an enemy, defend our country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. As a military member, the one thing I want is my president to protect me and my president to not risk my life for something that is not what I would consider a worthy risk. And some can argue whether Iraq and Afghanistan were worthy risks. Well, you know, time will tell, but I believe they were worthy of doing it. And then when Biden desecrated our entire military by the pullout in Afghanistan, I could not personally tell a human being to join the military during his presidency, and I did not. Some people would ask me whether they should join or whether they should reenlist, and I said, not with this president. Now, President Trump, we've gone full circle. I highly recommend it. And what I would love the listeners to understand, the military is not a job. Some military members do look at it that way, but it's not a job. It becomes a way of life, and you have to be willing to take a life and give your life to be in the military, and that's all there is to it. And you know, there'll be some that won't agree with me, and they'll say, well, if I join a certain service, you know, and I'm behind a desk. Well, a lot of Marines that joined the Marine Corps and ended up behind a desk, the next thing they know in Iraq, they were in a convoy fighting for their life, fighting for their brothers and sisters, because every Marine, every soldier, everybody is ultimately a fighting machine, man or woman, and you may have to be called to combat. I had a gunnery sergeant that worked for me that was he worked at the chow hall. But in Afghanistan and in Iraq, he was managing and controlling and leading vehicle convoys fighting the enemy. So if you join the military, you become an instrument of this country to defend our nation. And you have to have a president and a secretary of defense that does not take that lightly, because you saw the 13 lives that were lost at Abbey Gate.
Yeah.
In my, you know, unhumble opinion, my direct belief, wasted lives because of a failed presidential decision. And it just enrages me when I see those pictures.
Yeah.
Of those men and women that I will not say they died for nothing, because they were there fighting for our country, but what they died, but their lives were sacrificed by a moronic administration that allowed that to happen.
Yeah. And it makes me sick as we think about 4 years later. To me, it's not an anniversary. It's a commemorate. We in America will commemorate 4 years ago, you know, on the 15th tomorrow, thinking about what happened. But over there, you know, there are all these news stories and news coverage coming out from, you know, the Middle East, that the Taliban, it's a celebration. there at the airport. I mean, they actually celebrate what happened 4 years ago tomorrow, which that makes me sick, you know, to think that they actually celebrate that. Ugh.
Well, it does. It makes me sick, too. But the reality is they are our enemy.
Yeah.
Right? We left billions upon billions of dollars worth of equipment there. It just blows my mind the way we did that. We absolutely could have come up with a better solution. And if we couldn't have, and when I was in Iraq, and I talk about this in the book, we took weapons and weapons and weapons, and what we did with those weapons is we destroyed them so our enemies couldn't use them against us. So all we needed was a little more time. We could have, if we couldn't have bring it home,
yeah.
If we couldn't bring these aircraft, these tracks, whatever, any weapon we had of it, we could have destroyed them all. And the fact that we didn't and gave them to our enemy is just, it's insane.
Yeah, it truly is. Well, Colonel Dunn, we really appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining me today and appreciate your thoughts. Hope you come back again. Colonel Dunn, thank you so much.
And thanks for having me. Have a wonderful weekend.
Oh, you as well. Have a blessed day. So Marine Corps Colonel William Dunn, if you've never read his book, Gunfighters Rule, incredible, incredible book, incredible story. And so if you have thoughts about, you know, what he's talking about, especially thinking about tomorrow and what the commemoration will mean as the Taliban celebrates it, we across our nation, obviously, you know, we will be thoughtful and pray for the 13 lost. And then I agree with them, the conflict that we all feel, because on one hand, while we are critical of the Biden administration's disastrous, deadly withdrawal, on the other hand, we have to remember for those who served over the 20-year period in Afghanistan, to thank them for their service. And I think your service, if you're one of those who served, that absolutely matters, and you've made a difference in our world. I'm Dawn Stensland. We'll take a quick break. Be right back.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.